All right, we always have a lot of fun with our guests on the Higher Learning Podcast, but today with Jay Schwedelson takes the cake. Jay is an incredible marketing leader and founder of marketing companies here in South Florida, and we spent a lot of time talking about a range of topics, everything from direct mail to where marketing is going now, how you can take your personal brand to the next level, even tweaks to Love is Blind and how he would change that reality show. I think you can tell. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm positive you are too. Really excited for you to hear this episode. Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. Today, we have a very special guest. Today, we are joined by Jay Schwedelson. He is the CEO of SubjectLine.com, or founder of SubjectLine.com, and president and CEO of Outcome Media. How you doing, Jay?
I'm fired up to be here, and yeah, this is going to be fun.
You've had three Celsiuses, you said, right?
I'm three deep on Celsius. I don't know. And coffee. I don't know what that means, but that's my daily. I fall asleep so early, though. I have nothing at the end of the day. But during the day, I'm on fire.
Well, I'm with you. I think I've had, if I'm counting it up right now, we're a bunch of energetic guys. So we're just going to share some caffeine stories real quick. Three cups of coffee. Now I'm drinking a Celsius. And you're right. I sleep like a baby, which is probably why they're going to study my body at some point and say, how much caffeine can you put into a man until he dies? Because, yeah, this is a lot of caffeine for you and me. But that's why we have such great conversations and great podcasts, because that energy high is what keeps us going, right?
100%. I will tell you this, and I'm not sponsored by them, but I feel like I need to mention this. I have a mug that has changed my life. It's the Ember mug. Do you have this? You can control the temperature of your coffee on an app.
Yeah.
Okay? So I like hot coffee. So all day long, my coffee stays hot because of this mug. It is life-altering. So I love my Ember mug.
That's funny. I actually do have it. It's in my office. I have the copper version. It looks kind of like I'm drinking a Moscow Mule, so I usually don't have it on the podcast. But you're right. It's absolutely incredible. And then the Yeti is doing wonderful things with keeping ice cold. So we're in what I would like to say is the glory ages of keeping your drink extremely hot or extremely cold for long periods of time.
Absolutely.
I love it. All right, so brother, I want to talk to you. We've got a lot to dive into here. What fascinates me and what really fascinates me about most people is their story. But your entrepreneurial journey started really young. You were 4 years old. You were doing direct mail out of your garage with your parents. I've got to understand, were they always entrepreneurs? Do you remember what kind of spurred this decision to start their own company? And then I want to know what your role was at four and then how it grew with the company.
My role was not significant at four. But here's what happened. My mom was a school teacher, and this is in the 70s, and my dad worked at a magazine company. They did not like what they were doing. And they had this wacko idea, which back then, none of this existed. They took all the money they had in the world, and we didn't live in a big house at all. The house I grew up in cost $45,000. Okay, it's real small. And took all the money they had in the world, and they bought a personal computer. And their idea was to take things like the Yellow Page and type them into a computer and make lists for direct mail catalogers to send their catalogs out to, which sounds ridiculous in the world that we live in today. But back then, catalogers had nowhere to send out their lists to. So they started this business in my garage, and it did okay. And from the time I was four up all the way through high school, this was all that I knew. We were the family that had no garage. And they were running this strange direct mail business out of our garage. It was going fine. And I grew up around marketing, and it's all I ever knew. And in college, I didn't really love the idea of direct mail. They were still doing it. And so this is back in the early 90s. I started up an internet company called WebConnect, which was one of the first or second internet advertising companies on the planet. This was like predating DoubleClick and predating all of them. And it went okay. Didn't go bad. And but coming out of it, Google and Yahoo were starting to dominate the internet advertising business when I graduated college. And folks wanted to get out of the direct mail business that they were in. And I felt strongly that the world of internet advertising and direct mail were really merging together into the world of email, which is how I really got my agency going, how I started SubjectLine.com, and how email became a really big part of my business. And it's not the only thing I do today, but it is a big piece of my business. And I focused on email because I was always about measurable media, And it was an exciting place to be. So that's kind of my journey.
Yeah, so I'm really interested. I want to go back a little bit. So I gotta imagine your parents, they want to get out of kind of their corporate jobs. They start this business. At first, you're young, you don't really know what's going on. Do you remember like a specific moment where you were like, oh, this is real, or this is gonna be like rest of my life, rest of their life? Like, was there an inflection point where that really started to hit a critical mass where you recognized that, or was it kind of slow and steady all throughout?
You know, for them, they were desperate because they didn't have anything. We didn't, there was no fallback, there was no money. And I remember that, and this was always ingrained in me. My folks wouldn't come upstairs. The garage was downstairs. They wouldn't come upstairs until they had made a certain number of phone calls, tried to reach a certain number of prospects, until they had done everything they could possibly do, and the day was officially over. And this kind of it being built into my home just like was so ingrained into my brain from like a work ethic standpoint, like that was it for me. But the thing, the marketing piece of it, the reason I got excited about marketing was, especially the piece of this idea of response marketing, was I love the idea of a company could spend a dollar on marketing and they could make $2. It was this whole idea of measurable media. And to me, that fascinated me, that you could mess around and test and do all this stuff. And what could I do to help other companies spend a dollar and make $2? So that's what the work ethic and the measurable media has been my whole life.
Yeah, and listen, I would say marketing is something that over the last 30, 40 years obviously has had tons of innovation. It's pivoted, it's gone a lot of different ways. We've seen the proliferation of marketing analytics, cost of acquisition of a customer, lifetime value of a customer. We've seen direct mail to online to SEO. So your business is Outcome Media, and you have a second company called Guru Media Hub where you do a lot of events. We're gonna get into that in a minute. But I'm very, very interested. You've kind of seen the gamut of marketing, starting with direct mail to email campaigns and now conferences. Where do you think things are going? Like, as you start to look out over the next 5 to 10 years, how do you see things changing from a marketing perspective?
Yeah, so my business, my agency Outcome Media, we're about 100 or so person organization, and we focus on demand generation for business and consumer marketers. And so we do email, direct mail, podcast advertising, digital media, all this different stuff. And I will tell you that it's radically changing. And the reason it's radically changing is that what we are about to come up on in the next 12 to 24 months is a world where cookies are going to disappear. So the ability for marketers to be able to track potential buyers, consumer or business buyers, is going to become harder, right? So which is a good thing for the individual, makes it more difficult for the marketer. So marketing is going to become more obstacles to overcome. And the other thing that we're seeing explode right now is influencer marketing. And I'm not talking about the Kim Kardashians of the world, but influencer marketing for both business and consumer marketers is becoming a really large, viable channel. So we see those are the two biggest things that are happening where lacking in the ability to really track people, and then influencers having an even greater impact on marketing in general.
Okay, well, I want to add, now I'm curious. I want to talk about this. So I've spent a lot of time over the last year and a half, and I got to be honest with you, marketing personally myself was not something I was originally comfortable with. I was pushed to do it, become the face of our business, and make sure that like people could put a personal brand behind when they're using our services. And so, what do you see from a personal branding perspective? What would you advise somebody like me is the right way to go about this? It wasn't something I was comfortable with. I've started to get a little bit of traction with it, but I'm just interested in what you see from a personal branding perspective. And I'm not an influencer, but somebody that's trying to make a mark in my industry, like give me some advice. Help me understand right, like what the right approach is, and if you see this is worth the time and effort that goes into it.
Well, first of all, I think you are an influencer, and I'm not just saying that because you're a well-known person in your industry. You have a sizable following, and people think, "Oh, no, I don't have a million people." But that's not the case. In the world of influencer marketing, to give you an idea, over 90% of all influencer deals are done with people that have less than 100,000 followers on any given platform. And LinkedIn, as an example, is probably the fastest growing platform for influencer marketing. But putting aside being an influencer, a personal brand is going to become among the most important things any company can have, that their leadership has that. And the reason being is, as AI proliferates, what's going to happen because of AI is there's going to be a flood of content that's out there. And the content is going to be just so generic Because that's what really what AI produces is kind of like this generic feel. So having more humans that are the face of brands that are sharing their thoughts that you can't just create with AI is going to be more and more valuable. So the best thing that you can do, I believe LinkedIn is the best platform for this. And people say, oh, we do consumer marketing or whatever. There's a billion people on LinkedIn. Okay. And the thing about LinkedIn is it's a very positive platform. People like to very positive on there, and they're helping each other. And you could really grow your influence there and your industry awareness there. So getting comfortable being uncomfortable is the secret to growing your business. Because I don't like posting. I never post personally, but I'll post probably 4 or 5 times a week on LinkedIn because I know it's what fuels my business. So having a personal brand is going to be essential to grow any business, period. End of story.
Yeah, I want to double click into this a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about executives who maybe don't have their own business, are working for a Fortune 500 company or some startup, but they have things they want to say. They have, thought leadership opportunities they want to speak at. They want to be quoted in articles, but they don't know where to get started. How would you recommend, as kind of the first steps, if somebody wants to start to put themselves out there on LinkedIn, wants to start to build a little bit of a brand for themselves, what would you recommend and advise to them getting started?
Well, first of all, make it a priority. So what I do is, a lot of people say, well, I don't have time for that. I'm too busy. Listen, we're all busy. What I do for myself is I have it on my calendar every day. I start out my day 15 minutes on LinkedIn. That's it. 15 minutes every single morning. And before I started getting posting and all this different type of stuff, what I did was I started following all sorts of people that had decent sized followings, and I wanted to see what they were doing, right? And if you rewind 2 years ago, I think I had like 1,000 connections. Now I have almost 50,000 connections. And how did I do that? You can be either a creator or a curator. And the reason that's important is most people think is, well, I don't have enough ideas to post, or I don't have time to do whatever. And that's being a creator. You're trying to create original content, which can be hard. It's hard to think of that much stuff you want to say ongoing. But you can also be a curator, which is the fastest way to grow your personal brand, which is find really interesting things that people have posted. Don't click repost. That's not what you want to do. That actually will not circulate far at all. You find, little posts that people have done. Take a screenshot of it with that person's information and say, this is, I thought this was fascinating. You tag the person who said it and make sure that they have a really strong following, that they have 30, 40, 100,000 followers, and you just post their post, and you're a curator. You're sharing things with your network that you find interesting. You will be shocked, right, about how fast your network grows and how you are then thought of as a thought leader. And then you filter in stuff that you have actually created, and you fast forward a year or two, you're like, oh, what happened? I have a big personal brand, and that's it.
Jack, did you hear this? That's pretty brilliant. All right, I love that. That is amazing, actionable advice for people to use. Jay, you are the man. That is good stuff. Wait to, wait, wait till you follow me now for the next couple of weeks. You're gonna see that I'm gonna take your advice right there before this episode comes out. All right, let's talk about Guru Media Hub. You put on some of the world's best marketing conferences, and I'm not just saying that. We did our research. Like, your events are top-notch. I'm interested because I've been to a lot of conferences, and I'm gonna be honest, man. Like, 85, 90% of them suck. I mean, they are no good. I'm sure you've attended a lot. What makes a good conference to you from an attendee perspective? And then how do you try to build events that capture that je ne quoi, so to speak, for your attendees?
Well, that's an excellent question. I'll take it a step further. Not only do most conferences suck, but what we specialize in, what I do, are virtual conferences. And everybody hates virtual conferences. They're like, it's a ghost town. That was a COVID era thing. Nobody attends those anymore. They're epically boring. And I'll tell you what we do. So, for example, we have one conference. We have a number of events, but one conference called Guru Conference. It is a 2-day virtual conference about email marketing. Last year, we had 20,000 people. Okay, the year before that, we had 10,000 people. It is fun. And that is the difference. You can't be boring. Yes, you have to get educated. You have to share all the great information, but we also layer in fun. So we had TikTok dancers that taught everybody that attended how to do a dance. We did a hot wings challenge live with industry people. They had to eat the hot wings and almost throw up on screen. We had a live DJ. Right, we had a million things going on, and that's the thing about anything where you're asking somebody for time, Doesn't matter if it's an event, a big conference, if it's a webinar, if it's a podcast. When you're asking somebody for time, which is the most valuable thing we all have, you have to make it enjoyable. And people will say, well, I'm in a regulated industry. I'm in the government sector. I'm in financial services. We can't do that. We're buttoned up and blah, blah, blah. You are still dealing with people. People want to get the information, the content, but they want to make it enjoyable, right? So we do everything we can. We look at it from every angle and say, what can make this thing great? And that's how we've been able to grow that business and be successful.
That is fantastic. I gotta ask you, like, when you throw, a party or a dinner party, do you feel like undue pressure to make sure that you're like rising up to the level of expectation? Because I gotta imagine the attendees are like, oh, it's a J event. It's gonna be great. Like, do you feel pressure there? Or like, how do you handle on the personal side?
Well, the personal side of it, I'm extremely boring. Okay. I'm not that fun at all. But on when we do these conferences, you're 100% right that it is extremely nerve-wracking that everyone expects a certain level of engagement and fun and chaos. And you got to bring it, which is why I think you and I drink so much Celsius. But that's in general. I think that when we go out there and let's say somebody's going to do, they put on a webinar or whatever. And you just make it really dry. You make it a panel and it's 90 minutes. You're like, would you want to attend that? No. Make it 30 minutes. Make it fun. Make it engaging and then move on with your life. So, you have to think about, would I want to attend that thing? And if the answer is no, then you have to start over. And we have a meeting internally. And how do we make any decision? This is the least corporate thing in the world. We have a meeting about any new idea. And the name of the meeting on our calendars is Does This Suck? And every week we bring all of our ideas. And if anybody in the meeting thinks the idea sucks, we don't do it. And that is literally how we make our decisions about any ideas that we
I love that. All right, I gotta ask you. We gotta have you be a little vulnerable here because you've had to have missed at some of these. Can you tell me something that you set up for an event that you were sure was going to be great, and maybe it didn't work out the way you wanted to? Any examples come to mind?
Oh, I'll give you a great example. So we did the Hot Wings Challenge, okay, where, and I was one of the contestants. So we got all the sauces from the hot ones that you see on YouTube, where you eat these hot wings live and you pour the sauce on. Okay. And so I'd never done it before. And so we decided, let's buy the ultimate hot sauces. And we did this live. So we take all the hot sauce and we have these key important industry people that are from the email marketing world. We're on the screen together and I'm pouring it all on. And now I eat it. Okay, I'm eating it. And I literally thought I had to be like sponsored by Depends. I didn't think I was gonna make it through the session. Okay. I'm like, oh my God, this is really not going well for me. And I was sweating. It was bad. It was a rough night. But it ended. I mean, everyone loved it, but they loved seeing me like almost collapse. But that didn't go the way I thought it was going to go.
Well, I appreciate you being so honest. And the next time anybody brings up any type of hot sauce challenge, you're gonna be like, that sucks. We're not doing that. Get that one out of here. Jay,
That's exactly right.
do me one favor. Let's just hold up our Celsius. This
Cheers.
podcast is sponsored by Celsius, not because they're paying me any money, but because of all the energy
Right.
we have is on behalf of Celsius. All right, I gotta ask you,
Always.
you have a guilty pleasure, reality
Yes, I do.
TV, so much so that you had
Yes.
cast members of Love is Blind at one of your recent conferences, okay?
That's right.
So this is where I open up and I give you a little bit of inside baseball here with me. I love watching The Real World and The Challenge, and then my wife dragged me through multiple seasons of Housewives, Miami, New Jersey, and Salt Lake City. So I got two
Nice.
questions for you, okay? First one
Yes.
is, you can go on any reality TV show and compete as a contestant or be involved. Which one is it?
Well, assuming I wasn't happily married, I have to put that caveat in because, that would be awkward. If I was single, and younger, I would 100% want to be The Bachelor because that looks
But
incredible
you
to
wouldn't
me.
want to be competing for the Bachelorette. You'd have to be the Bachelor where they're fawning all
No,
over you.
no.
Okay, just making sure.
Absolutely would never want to be like one. If it was, let's say, The Bachelorette and there were 30 guys, I would not want to be one of those 30 guys. That looks horrible. But being the main person, home run all day long, that's easy.
I mean, I think it'd be a lot of stress to be managing all these different women and picking who gets the roses, but I agree with you. I'd much rather do that than compete with like 29 other dudes and then
That's right.
potentially get voted off like on the first episode, and you are getting destroyed by
Yes.
your guy friends from that point forward. I mean, you're just known as the dude who got kicked off on the first episode.
1,000%. Yeah. So what would you want to be on?
I like the competition shows, but here's the problem. Like, I'm watching, like, The Challenge, right, for instance, right? And we got, like, CT, and we got Johnny Bananas, and they got their six-packs, and they're running and doing all these things. And I'm, like, looking at my wife. I'm like, I could do that. I could. And the funny thing is, I try to jog then to, like, the mailbox, and I'm, like, out of breath. So, like, my ability in my head on what I can do to compete, you know, the mind, the trivia games and the politics, I think I'd do great. The physical endeavors, as much as I like to go to the gym and run a little bit, I think I would get wiped out by these people who are training. And by the way, are they checking for PEDs on reality TV shows? I don't think they are. I don't think they are. That's the next big scandal we got to look out for. We'll see.
Yes, huge.
Okay,
huge.
One last reality TV show question. If you could tweak one existing show and make one tweak to it that would make it a lot better, what would that be?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I guess Love is Blind. I mean, Love is Blind is an incredible show. But I think that if they leave the pods and they do the whole wedding thing, I don't really understand why they go all the way to the altar. And so I think that I would just do a little bit more explaining of how it all works to the audience, because to me, it doesn't add up. The show doesn't add up. I love the show, but they need to do more explaining of the process.
Okay, so Love is Blind is having a definite moment right now. I told you I was going to research a little bit and watch it. I did not get to it. I was watching Shogun and The New Look and all these TV shows.
Shogun looks good.
Shogun's good. You should check it out. But I was at a company lunch today, and everybody was talking about Love is Blind, and they're saying how messy it is. What can you tell us about this season? Give us like a quick critique.
I will tell you without I don't want to give any spoilers. Okay, but the reason I think one of the things that is wild is there's this one couple, this guy Jimmy and this woman Chelsea. All right, and while they were in the pods, and this has been out there now for a while, so I could say this: you're not supposed to say what you look like. But Chelsea told Jimmy, and they couldn't see each other, that she looked like Megan Fox, and he was like, whoa, well, that's great news. And so he ultimately picked her. But once he saw her, and this is no knock on Chelsea, I mean, not many people can look like Megan Fox. She doesn't look like Megan Fox. All right. So instantly it was like, he was like, what did I pick here? You know? And that has been such a hot mess. Like, you don't want to say, hey, I look like Brad Pitt. Like, that doesn't end well for anybody. So that's just been like watching it unfold and him still saying that he loves her when you know he probably doesn't is a mess.
Okay, Jay, I got to ask you. You're on Love is Blind and they're asking, what celebrity do you look like? I want to know the eye level here. Who are you going with?
It's funny. When I was – so years ago, people would say to me, I look like Patrick Dempsey, McDreamy. But here's the problem. They said I looked like him when he was in the movie Can't Buy Me Love. And then Patrick Dempsey got a nose job. And ever since he got a nose job and became McDreamy on Grey's Anatomy, not a single person on earth has ever said it to me. So I'm McDreamy pre-nose job, which is the most depressing thing of all time. Who do you get?
See, I am a big under-promise, over-deliver. So I'm just going to say I'm Steve Buscemi. And then they see me and they're like, oh, shit, this guy's amazing. Now, I mean, I don't know. I've been told in the past. I don't even want to say it. This is terrible. When I was younger, okay, I'll give you one I used to get all the time. When I was 20 to 25, I used to get Ricky Martin all the time. And I had a little bit of the highlights in my hair. And people were telling me I was living La Vida Loca. I've gotten Josh Duhamel before. But no, I'm going to really undersell myself. And that way when they see it, either they're feeling regretful that they didn't pick me, or they're like, oh, you know what? He looks a lot better than Steve Buscemi. So I'm happy.
You definitely look a lot better than Steve
Buscemi.
I
appreciate that.
Him, come on.
how you doing, fellow kids? One of my favorite memes. last thing before we get into the hiring. I asked you to review and critique my posting in our companies. I know we talked about personal brand a little bit earlier. You mentioned a little bit about the followers. Any type of, you know, just lay it out there for me. Lay it on me. What do you see? What do you like? What do you not like about our company's posting and my posting?
I would just say do more. I just think a level of frequency just needs to be amped up. And then just a level, there's no bad, right, at all. But if I'm critiquing, I would just say, also be a little bit more willing to not be formatted, for lack of a better word, right? I think that in general, most people that post It's okay, let's make sure this all looks right. Let's make sure our graphics are spot on, our logos here, whatever. And we actually did a lot of analysis behind this. Non-formatted posts that are literally, hey, I'm outside, what up? You know, do like three times better than organized posts or formatted posts. So those are things, it's kind of like what you were saying before, getting comfortable with the uncomfortable. That would be kind of where my head's at.
Okay. Good feedback. I appreciate that. There's probably more than a few people on LinkedIn who have muted me that are like their head just exploded because they feel like I need to post more. But I'm taking Jay's advice. I'm going even
There
harder. I'm taking it to the
you
mat
go.
and I'm going harder day in, day out. All
There
right.
you go.
We got to pay the bills. That's why we talk about hiring on this show. So here's where we're going
Yes,
to
sir.
start. You've grown a couple different companies, you've hired
Yes.
hundreds of people throughout your career. Tell me off the
Yeah.
top of your head, what is a core hiring philosophy of yours, Jay?
Well, and you probably hear this a lot, but I really do believe it. We hire the person. We're not trying to hire for the role. I cannot tell you how many times we've been trying to fill for a role. Somebody will come in and be like, this person's awesome, but would be horrible in sales, even though we're hiring for sales, but we think they'd be great in marketing or in this other thing. And some of the most talented, most wonderful people that have stayed the longest are people that we hired for things that we were not interviewing them for. So I really think looking for the right people and keeping an open mind to maybe other things they could do in your organization has proved for my business to be one of the secret sauces.
I love that. Can you tell me what are the attributes behaviorally that you love to have in people you bring into your organization?
This is not like, I'm sure I'm gonna heat for saying this way, but people that are just like regular and that they get it, like it's not where they're trying to come off super polished or they're super awkward to talk to. It's somebody that if you were outside of work, you were like, oh, this person's cool. I could have dinner with this person. They're totally like on the same wavelength as me. And it really does matter. Unless, it's some sort of super technical thing, right? You need some sort of really high-end developer who maybe their social skills are a little bit, different, which is fine. But almost every other role, if the person can't communicate with you and you feel comfortable doing that, I have found it doesn't end well. So that skill, whatever that is like really important.
Yeah, we call that the car trip test here. Are you willing to get in a car with this person for 4 hours and not like blow your brains out by the end of the car
Right.
trip? Jackie, how do you feel like I would do on a car trip? Would I be enjoyable?
I feel like you have a fire
I have a fire playlist as well.
Nice.
There
That's
you go. And
important.
Jackie, I would love to take you on a car trip as well. Your good
See?
conversation, great creativity, great content. Jay, I'm gonna tell you what, buddy. You and I should take a car trip. I think you'd be a great
Let's
time.
go.
Yeah.
Let's
I mean, all the
go.
Celsius in the back, the cans in the back would be a bit of a disruption, but other than that, I think it'd be amazing. All right.
I'm in.
Interview, memorable interview. If I tell you, I ask you, what about a memorable interview you've had? Either you were interviewing somebody, you went to an interview, what comes to mind?
I'll tell you the worst interview I ever was a part of. So we were interviewing this woman, and I was in there with my HR person. And my HR person says to the woman across the table, she goes, just so you know, we always do checks on diplomas, because she had just handed over like a copy of her diploma, whatever. And as soon as my HR person said that, this woman, she lunged across the table. Physically, like dove across the table and tried to grab the envelope or the folder that had her diploma in it, because apparently it was fabricated and it wasn't real. And she got into a wrestling match with my HR person. And it was like, I was like, what the hell do I do? This is wild. And she had
Whoa.
emailed it in before. I'm like, we had you emailed the same thing to us. Like, what are we doing here? And we had to call the police because she wouldn't leave until we handed her the folder. And she didn't get the job. I mean,
Oh, shocker.
it was definitely the most memorable thing of all time.
Well, after the cops came, she definitely graduated from the School of Hard Knocks. Like, that is
Yeah.
insane. So she's just like, and your HR person was like fighting back with her? She just let her have it?
Yeah,
Or, okay.
the whole thing. I'm like, give it to her. Who
Yeah,
cares? Let her out of here.
I'm like, for that reason, I'm out. Just take the diploma, whatever you want. You want my wallet? We'll call the cops after you leave. That is incredible.
It was wild. It was a wild day. I didn't know what was happening. I was like, get me out of here.
Unfortunately, you can't be a positive reference for her either. So that's too bad.
Right.
What about favorite question? Do you have a favorite question you like to ask?
You know, the question, it's almost like a trick question. The question is, where do you want to be in 5 years? And the reason it's, and I don't like any trick questions, but the reason that it's a half trick question is oftentimes people answer it and they'll say, well, my dream job is blah, blah, blah. And it's something in a different industry or something completely different, whatever. And it's a big red flag to me because then it says, okay, this is a stopover until they get to the thing that they really want to do. And I don't want to be a stopover. I want people to build their careers with me and stay with me for a really long time. And I want to help them build their careers. I don't want to be somebody's, you know, one step before they go on to the thing they really want to do. So that question has sadly been very, very useful.
Ooh, I really like that. What about, how do you give people a realistic job preview of what it's like to work at Guru or Outcome or any of your organizations? Like, how do they know what they're going to walk into? Because, you know, listen, it's just as much them interviewing you as you're interviewing them, right? So what are the, how do you let them know this is what to expect when you work here?
That's a totally, it's a great question because to your point, the worst thing I think you could do as a business owner or somebody that's in a hiring role is to paint a false picture of what it's going to be like. Because then it's, everybody loses. You're going to train the person. They're going to be onboarded. They're like, this stinks. This is not what they said it was going to be. And then you waste time and money and their time. Terrible. So when we get to a point where we think somebody's great and we really want to consider them, I take people that are in their department, not people that they're going to necessarily be reporting to, and I put them in the room with the person that we're interviewing. And everybody knows in my company, be real, be extremely transparent. Nothing bad is going to happen by sharing any information, right? And we encourage the person that we're interviewing, now you ask the questions. Ask whatever you want to ask. Ask anything. Nothing's off limits. And that way, when that's over, the person's like, all right, you know what? This isn't for me. Or this feels like a perfect fit for me. And that allows, and I'm not just saying this because my company, I haven't had somebody quit working for me in over 2 years. And we create an environment that you kind of want to stay. We're proud of that.
Yeah. And listen, I will tell you that last year was a tough year, 2023. I would say that. So there was a little bit of anomalies there from what we're used to. But we almost have never lost anybody from quitting to go to another organization. We've tried to create an environment. And listen, we actively and intentionally build that environment. What would we like when we go to work? Well, first, you want to work with people that don't suck. You want to work with people that you want to get in a foxhole with, you want to solve challenges with, but also that they kind of pass that car trip test, somebody that you want to share things with. You want to have the tools to be able to be successful in your role. You want to be serving a bigger purpose, you know, and it's nice to have, you know, things that you're invested in, whether it be development, whether it be training and learning, whether it be a lunch every once in a while to bring everybody together. These are the type of things that you actively have to work on a day-by-day basis to create an environment where your attrition is low, your tenure is high, and your engagement is high, maybe most importantly. So kudos to you for doing that. That's an amazing, amazing thing. And it sounds like you've built an environment where people love to come to work, which to me is 80% of the battle. You do that, you're going to solve great problems. You're going to be great for your customers. You're going to do amazing things as a company. Last hiring question, we all miss. I know you had to have made hires that you didn't love in the past, maybe even in the recent past. When you look back on hires that didn't work out, is there a theme there? Is there something that you look back and you're like, man, I wish I would have done that differently?
I think that being a little bit short-sighted with either titles or dollars. I think earlier on in my career, I would get hung up on, is somebody going to be a manager, a senior manager, an associate director, or this $5,000 here, there, wherever. And in the long term, those titles, what was the difference? And the dollars, what was really the difference? We lost out on this A player. And so if I could go back to my younger self, I'd be like, you know what? Great. You know, that title doesn't cost you a dollar. Bring him on board and let's get him involved. Or that $5,000, you're going to be running ads to get somebody else here for another $5,000. Why not get this person here and overpay a little bit, right? Whatever the number was. And so I think that not getting caught up in the quote unquote small stuff allows you to get people that can be incredible. And we lost out on a good number of people because I was an idiot.
Well, Appreciate that vulnerability. I'll tell you two things, two bits of advice for anybody listening or even for yourself. So the first one I would tell you is, if you have somebody sitting in front of you that's a hell yes, that's an A player, that's a difference maker, a needle mover, absolutely get out of your own way and stop worrying about $5,000 a year compensation band here. Bring that person into your organization and be confident that you'll never look back and say, damn, I wish I wouldn't have given that last $5,000. Because the only reason you do that is because you made a bad hire. So it's worth its weight in gold when you got that person in front of you. I actually had the reverse problem on titles. I was of the mind, cares, it's a title, you want it, that's not important to me, that's a free thing I can give away to you if that makes you happy. But then as the organization grew, right, my HR team had to come and pull me aside and say, hey, we got these VPs here and this here, and we have to have some sort of structure. And so I've had to kind of walk some of that back and be a little bit more intelligent about it, but at the same time, creating like levels within your system, or just saying, you know what, I'm loving you and you're somebody that's gonna be a great fit for our role. We had this as a director, but I want to make it a senior director. You know what, I even want to make it a VP. I think being nimble like that can get you the right person. And you and I both know, especially in organizations the size of what we have, one or two people can change everything for your company if they're the right positions and the right people. So highly recommend, if you got somebody in front of you that's a hell yeah, do what you got to do to get them in there. If they're not a hell yeah, then don't worry about it. It's not even worth debating. All right, what are you working on right now that you're super excited about?
Business-wise? Yeah. Well, we just launched a podcast network. So podcasting is an explosive area for us, an explosive area of marketing. So we are now actually helping podcasters to launch shows in all sorts of categories, get the word out. So I'm really doubling down in the podcasting world because I think it's amazing. So that's been exciting for us.
Nice. I love that. And I certainly, you're preaching to the choir on this one. So yeah, exactly. So into the point of what you said earlier around branding and building engagement, I found a couple posts of yours. One was at 65,000 and it was Netflix crushed the marketing rollout of Wednesday. Great to see so many formats used, and you had a bunch of different pictures. And then you had one that got about 13,000 likes and engagement. McDonald's gets it. When marketing has a human personality, we respond. Can I get a, is what McDonald's did. So I'm just interested. You organically found these. You liked them. They're good examples of marketing for you. You put it out to the world. And then you got the dopamine hits of people saying, you know what? I agree with you. This is amazing. Thanks for bringing this to the table. What was the thought process around it? Did you have any sense that they were going to pop off like this?
Yeah, you know, I like sharing marketing that I find interesting, right? And that allows my network to grow. So example, that one you mentioned about Wednesday, which is the TV show on Netflix, they did a really great out-of-home marketing campaign. So I saw some images of what they were doing. I posted that on LinkedIn. That ended up getting, I think, 11 million organic views and 65,000 likes or something like that on LinkedIn, which is a lot for LinkedIn. And I ended up meeting a lot of amazing people, and I didn't spend $1 on that. And that's the type of stuff that you can share all day long. You just find interesting things that you didn't have to create, and it allows you to grow your network, and you meet people, and it's a fantastic way to network.
I love it. I think you're spot on. You've like blown my mind. I'm like ready to go run to my LinkedIn post right after this, man. This is great stuff. Great, great advice. All right. I know you're going to have a good answer here. And here's the caveat. You can't answer any reality TV. I need to know your favorite piece of content you've consumed in the last couple months. Could be a book, could be an article, could be a Netflix show, whatever you want. What's your favorite piece of content?
Oh, wow. That is, I'll give you two things. One is I'm really loving Andrew Huberman's podcast. The dude talks about, you know, a healthy life and all this scientific stuff. And I couldn't do science in school. I was an idiot, but I feel like I learned so much. So if you don't know Andrew Huberman's podcast, you gotta check this out.
Sure.
And then I just read Shoe Dog, which is the book from Phil Knight, the founder of Nike. I got to tell you, that was, you know, business memoirs, the same thing. Also Bob Iger's Ride of a Lifetime from Disney.
Also a great
business
book.
Yeah, business memoirs from people that really have done it. I love them. I can't get enough of them. So that's my favorite content right now.
Yeah, so I'll tell you, I read Shoe Dog a little while ago. And one thing that was so informative about it for me is I had some partners when I started. One partner didn't work out with. There was a bunch of legal issues that came with that. And I was reading the Shoe Dog book. And very early on, when he's talking about the story of Nike, he's talking about how, you know, he had this issue with the Tiger company in Japan and it was going to bring him down. And then it was like so stressed out and it was such a thing for him. And then you go to chapter two or chapter three. And then that's the whole story of Nike after that. And so that was such a informative thing for me to say, God, this is something you've been dealing with. It's been a lot of stress. It's been a lot of heartache. But ultimately, that's just the first chapter of your book. And there's a lot of opportunity beyond that. So I love Shoe Dog. And then Iger is amazing. We can all debate whether his return to Disney has been what we hoped and wanted it to be. But certainly what he did to get Marvel going, all those different things that he did, everything he touched was gold. Certainly an exceptional leader. I'll give you another one. Definitely a controversial figure. But I just finished Isaacson's Elon Musk. And I've read about Elon in the past. But I can't believe the level of access Isaacson gets. Like, it's almost like he's riding shotgun with him in the Tesla the entire time and just like getting like his real feelings on things and getting into his head. It is an amazing insight into somebody's mind and head. And you're not going to agree with everything for sure. But certainly I walked away thinking, I understand why this guy's the success he is. He's willing to do things, uncommon things that most people are not willing to do.
Will you go on the first trip to Mars? I mean, are you
So I got to, let's talk about this. I got to be honest with you, brother. I don't like heights. And in fact, I'm not very good on planes. Like when I'm on a plane, I've got to pretend like I'm in a train in the air. It's actually like kind of obnoxious if you're sitting next to me. Cause like the first like 10 minutes, it's like, I'm a little bit anxious if there's turbulence and then I normalize and I'm good. Maybe a drink will help me. So the thought of me getting in a rocket ship, listen, man, I'll let the first couple missions go. And then maybe we'll have some like super Xanax or something at that point. I'll pop one of those babies, wake up on Mars, meet you at the bar. Last question. If you had one bit of advice to give 20-year-old Jay that you didn't know then, but you know now, or maybe it's some early in career talent listening to this, what would be that advice?
I think, so my grandfather gave me advice that has served me very, very well in life. Which was, I remember early on in my business, I was really stressing out and I felt I had imposter syndrome. I thought I am an idiot. And I just felt totally inadequate in every which way. And I'll never forget, he put his arm around me. I was having a rough day and he was at my office for some reason. And he looked at me and he goes, Jay, stupider people than you have been able to do it. And that resonated with me always. Whatever it is, when I think I'm inadequate or I'm not qualified to do the thing, I always say to myself, which is a horrible thing to say, I'm like, somebody out there stupider than I am has been able to do this thing. So I must be able to figure it out. And it motivates me in the most depressing kind of way. So just realize you can do it.
I will, listen, number one, you're super humble. You're super accomplished, man. It's great that you share that you go through those things. I think all of us with some level of success do at some level. What I will say is another great recommendation I got here. There's a book called The Talent Code. And there's a full chapter in this book about the most motivating thing is when you see somebody that you think is not unlike you in many different ways, whether it's a racial demographic, a societal demographic, an intelligence demographic, whatever it is, have great success. That is by far the number one motivator it like a Russian tennis players who used to see Anna Kournikova and be like, I'm better than her. Why couldn't I do this? Or I believe there was South Korean golfers Michelle Wee, I think, became an incredible golfer. And so that followed. And I will tell you this, you know what drove me and motivated me to open a business? I was working in downtown Fort Lauderdale. I had a day job and a night job very famously. And I met a lot of people that were very successful in business, very successful. And maybe it's because I'm meeting them at midnight after they've had a couple of drinks. But I'm talking to these people and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. This guy lives on the intercoastal of Los Angeles. This guy has this big of a boat. This guy has a private jet. I could do this. What is stopping me from going and being able to be professionally successful? Now, I still got a long way to go. We're still writing the chapters in that book. But that was one of the biggest motivating factors to me to say, I can open my own company. I can have success. And I feel like I can bring something to the table that others are not. And here we are. We'll see how it goes. But that was a very motivating factor for me. Not that dissimilar from what your grandfather put his arm around you and said to you, huh?
Absolutely. And you are crushing it. And you can do it. Everybody out there, you can do it. And you got it. And you have to do it. Because the other thing I always say to myself is regret is worse than failure. I would rather try and fail every day than to live my life saying, I should have done whatever. Because that sucks.
I totally agree with you. And I'll reframe it even differently. Failure is just success in progress. You cannot be successful without experiencing failure. So just accept that, take that medicine, and keep running. Jay, amazing podcast. I had a great time. You have a good time?
Yeah, this is awesome. Awesome stuff.
Appreciate you coming on, brother. I can't wait for this to come out. Thanks so much. Namaste. Have a good one.
All right. Take it easy.
Take it easy. Thank you for listening to Higher Learning with me, Oz Rashid. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode.